Did you come to Berkeley Law hearing about race and gender? Is it something that was activated while you're in school?
When I was in undergrad, I wasn't that politically active. I taught fifth grade in the Bronx. And from the experiences of working in the Bronx, from working in advocacy, where we supported things like trying to reduce the school-to-prison pipeline, trying to improve more supports for teachers of color, I saw that policy and law is not agnostic. It has and is inextricably informed by the race, gender, and other identities that people bring and people need to be serviced by.
Sure.
Coming into Berkeley Law, I realized that I wanted to keep and retain that perspective. And so now every day I walk into the building that's named Bolt Hall. It was named for John Bolt, who was an attorney in California in the 1800s and who was also a huge proponent of the Chinese Exclusion Act. And so every day I walk into the building of someone who didn't want me in that building. And one way that strikes me as kind of a privilege to be able to realize how far we've come and to go through that transformative act when I step into class every day. But it also reminds me how much we need to do to ensure that there is more of a consciousness of race and gender in the law and more of a consciousness for communities that have been traditionally underserved, whether it's Chinese Americans who have been discouraged to speak their own language all the way to Black communities that have been disenfranchised and have had a history of being pushed out a mere 5 miles from this campus. If you could change one thing about how law school talks about race, what would you change?
It would be to encourage Berkeley Law to take more seriously critical race theory and its connection to the law. Critical race theory is really thinking about how institutionalized racism continues to affect Black and brown bodies today. And it also thinks critically about how white normativity has colored each of our systems, from education to policy, really everything that affects people in their everyday life. And so I wish that Berkeley Law would take the opportunity to talk about these things and to take a moment when we read a case where the jury is instructed to use race to consider that a Black man is going to rape a white woman if he's walking behind her because he's Black and there's no other reason that he'll be walking behind her unless he's going to rape her. I wish that in those moments we would take a breather and take time to say, this is really racist. And the law has been really racist. And even if the Black letter law is this objective thing that does not see race, humans who go on to apply the law and interpret the law can be racist, right? And so having real conversations about that, to be able to say that we're flawed and that our nation's history is a gruesome history of racism, of discrimination, of oppression. I wish we would do that more. I think what that might require is tapping into professors who take seriously the connection between critical race theory and law, academic scholars whose life's work revolves around thinking about race and the law. That is one way to tackle what I feel like I struggle with in terms of being in the classroom, but having no outlet to discuss race with people in this classroom who are going to go on to be leaders in our nation. And so I want to throw that back at you. What would you change about the way that Berkeley Law thinks about race or talks about race?
If I could change one thing, it would really be to come to a point where we are not considering race as a separate or an add-on. And then it goes for all questions of gender, LGBTQ concerns, and identity, period. I would change things so that identity were not a separate consideration, but an integral part of our curriculum. One of the first cases we read in property is Johnson versus McIntosh, which tells the story of an issue where a man had purchased land from Native American tribes as early as the 1700s. And when that property was contested, the court held in favor of someone who swooped in and basically pretended, and the court sided with, the argument that the Native Americans never had a right to the land in the first place, despite them being here for generations before that court ever started session.
Right.
And so I was gratified to learn about that while also being dismayed that that legacy of disenfranchisement continues today. As helpful as it was to have that as a part of my curriculum and not a separate class I had to take, I've also seen places where that's not been the conversation in class and where there's such an emphasis on Black letter law and learning the content. And I think things like the bar exam, things like professional standards have an opportunity to change this, but at the moment tend to reinforce this dynamic mm-hmm. where we can have a whole conversation about something like possession in criminal law and never talk about the ways in which possession statutes are disproportionately applied mm-hmm. to racial minorities.
Yeah.
And in the same vein, we can also have an entire conversation about, say, juvenile justice and not talk about the different experiences that Black students in my school faced when I was teaching.
Yeah.
So when we think about things like the black letter of the law, when we think about things in which we're looking at what the law actually says as written through centuries of statutes and mm-hmm. legislation
common law, judge-made law,
and years of court precedents and decisions, and compare that to the fuller 360-degree context in mm-hmm. which that takes place, we see that there's a real opportunity to talk about that rest of the context, and legal education seems to be moving there. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that our school and our community continues its leadership role in ensuring that those conversations don't fall by the wayside, but are really at the forefront of what students and future leaders learn.
I'm thinking about our class that we're currently taking, School to Prison Pipeline, which I think has been an interesting class in that it's a one-credit course, but you really get to dig into an issue that is central to thinking about access to higher education and graduate education. That class really dives into how, for example, grade school has a unique and cherished almost relationship to the juvenile justice system. And this is a system that we go on to learn about through black letter law, quote unquote. But these have real consequences for real people and especially for youth. And I am of the mind that getting youth and in particular youth of color on track to do well and to really thrive through access to resources is where you can really start to see change as you move higher up on the totem pole.
The other class we have together that's been really yeah. enriching, which is our constitutional law class. What's wonderful about that class is it's a 30-person class. It's really centered on discussion and doing small writing assignments to really wrestle with the fundamental moral questions that the law brings up. And it's also the only class where it is a majority-minority class. And while some might have negative impressions of that, to the contrary, I think that that environment makes for such a rich discussion because so many of us have so many different backgrounds that mm-hmm. we bring into that class, mm-hmm. whether it's growing up without or with privilege, whether it's growing up having experienced the disproportionate impact of policies on racial, gender, and socioeconomic lines.
For sure.
I remember being able to talk in that class and discuss something like our critical debate around affirmative action right now
yeah.
and think about my experiences as a Chinese American, mm-hmm. my parents' experiences growing up in this country, and being able to wrestle with that mm-hmm. in the legacy of Supreme Court decisions has allowed me to envision my future role in the new civil rights movement that we need in this century.
Our con law class has been another class where I feel like I wish that we were having these type of conversations in all of our classrooms, and maybe not every single one. I think that there are some things where it's kind of like you just got to learn it, right? Like contracts. Although there is some disparities in terms of contracting for black and brown people. But one of the most important things you said today was that it should be infused in the legal culture, that this should not be something separate that we're talking about. But we should talk about it as it really matters for minority groups and not ignoring it.
What you're saying is that elitism is a proxy for privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to figure out ways in this school
yeah.
and generally in the legal and policy community how to break apart those barriers.
Yeah.